Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Can we be there?
Now we are here.
Oh, just think of the time.
You don't have to think about the time. It's right here. It's right now.
Love so strange.
When that clock strikes noon.
Game time.
You know what you're going to get.
Game time.
You know what I love, man?
Hey.
And I get to see it a handful of times a year. I love it. I love seeing it. It never gets old for me. Is watching champions celebrate. There is something so, and it's heartbreaking for the other side because you know they just ran this marathon and came up just short. But the joy and elation of watching a season end with a team celebrating a championship, a team starved from championships. This isn't, you know, and I know, hey, if you're a Bruins fan, hey, tough luck. Okay, you can lean back on some other Stanley Cups. But to watch a city and a team celebrate a championship, like at the end of a long, long road, is one of the coolest things in sports.
It really is. And kudos to the St. Louis Blues. I mean, they're in last place in January.
Crazy.
I mean, a flat-out unbelievable story.
Only in hockey. That would never happen in the sport of basketball. Never happened in the NBA.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. But to be able to go from last place to, you know, 5-6 months later, hoisting the Stanley Cup trophy, I mean, that's remarkable. What a great story. And to win it in Game 7 the way that they did, having the lead, the 3-2 lead, and, you know, now you got to go on the road to get it done, and you do it. Really, really cool. It was fun to watch. I was pulling for St. Louis. I wanted the underdog to win, and I had a blast. My son and I were watching it, and we had a blast watching it. He was pulling for St. Louis. My other son can't pull for our same team, so he was pulling for the Bruins, and we were rubbing it in his face. It was so much fun. I'm glad they beat them. I'm tired of Boston. I'm tired of all of those championships that they're winning. It's almost making me not want to be a Red Sox fan anymore, Zach.
Really?
Yes.
Come on.
They're obnoxious, Zach. They are obnoxious, so I'm glad they lost.
What is about them that is obnoxious?
I mean, do you see the billboards that they put up like 128 days since our last championship?
So what?
They're obnoxious,
but,
dude. Hey,
dude, if you win that much, why can't you?
Exactly, but it makes me not like them.
Floss a little bit.
Hey, floss. If you want to floss, floss.
You don't want them flossing.
No, they can floss, but it doesn't mean I have to like them. I'm telling you, they're making me not want to be a Red Sox fan anymore is what I'm saying. Good for them. Look, if we were winning championships, I'd probably be doing the same thing. But people don't like you when you act like that, right? It's like you against the world.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that's kind of how it is with Boston fans right now. They've been very fortunate. They're on a great run.
It's unbelievable. It's one of, if not the greatest sports run for any particular city in the history of American sports. Literally.
So... I was glad that the Bruins lost.
You're glad that the Bruins lost.
Absolutely.
I saw you on Twitter.
You saw that?
Yeah, you like were like taking offense to some of the language that was bleeding through the NBC broadcast.
I don't know about bleeding through, like just like it was piped through, like clear as day. Clear as day wasn't like way in the background. It was like front and center. Here comes the F-bomb once. Oh, next player gets it again. Next player gets it again.
It was like three in a row.
No, it's more than that.
Oh, whatever.
Yes. It was like five or six guys in the first eight guys that just dropped F-bombs, and a couple of them were like so clear. And look, I'm watching it with my 15-year-old, okay? He has heard it before.
He has heard that word before.
He has heard it. Not from me. Not from me. Maybe from his mom.
Maybe me on speaker.
Right. He's heard it from his mom, and then, you know, YouTube and nowadays, so they you know, kids hear it, right? So, look, it's not like, and we kind of chuckled at first, and then it happened again and again. I'm just like, and my other son, he wasn't paying much attention, my 13-year-old at this time. And so I'm just like, if he was watching, I had to turn the channel or mute it. And just like a little bit ridiculous. It was way overboard. Like NBC, is there anybody paying attention to what's going on? Is this the norm now? I don't know. Maybe it's the norm, and maybe I need to get hip with the time. Of course not.
Okay. Because then when they came back, I don't know how long you stuck with the broadcast, Doc Emmerich, who, just to get this off my chest, is the best broadcaster in American sports. Best broadcaster. Who would be?
You better get in line behind Jim Nantz.
Dude, no. I'm saying
you better get in line behind Jim Nantz.
No disrespect to Jim
Nantz. Well, you're disrespecting him.
No.
Don't say no disrespect.
Doc Emmerich's job is infinitely harder than any job that Jim Nantz has to do.
Jim Nantz does everything. He does golf. He does basketball. He does football. I mean, and he does it at the highest level.
Jim Nantz does basketball?
Yeah, do you watch the Final Four?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does. Look, he does do basketball, Zach.
Doc Emmerich is as good
behind Jim Nantz
as anyone else in sports.
Okay. Second.
Well, he apologized when they came back from break.
Late there, Doc.
Well, dude, here's the thing. Who are you blaming?
I am blaming NBC. I'm not blaming Doc, but I am blaming NBC, right, for not having somebody with a little bit more awareness to cut the mic. Are they not on a delay at all? Second delay?
They are, in fact, on a delay.
Well, then shame on them. I mean, it's clear as day. It's very easy to hit the dump button or whatever they have there to...
Happens during an NBA game once a game because they have the mics on the hoops and you'll hear someone curse and the audio will go out for 2 seconds at a time and they can dump it.
So, I mean, what were they doing? Were they sleeping? Did they not have enough personnel working? What was going on there where they just totally dropped the ball for that long? And it wasn't like one time, a slip of the tongue of one guy. No, it was like five or six. And I'm not exaggerating. It was absolutely ridiculous. And it's just like, wow. So I'm blaming the network, but also the players. I mean, come on, guys.
You're really blaming the players.
That's
where I have to disagree with you.
Can I finish?
Yes, you can. Go
ahead. Okay, and then you can come back at me if you want.
Okay.
But, look, you won the Stanley Cup. It's been like 20 minutes. You celebrated with your team. You know, drop all the F-bombs you want with your team. You are getting the Stanley Cup. And all you do is circle around for like 5, 6, 7 seconds.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
Okay? And you have a camera right in front of your face. Do you really have to say, yeah, bleep, bleep, yeah? I mean, do you really have to say that? Like, can you not show your emotions like, we did it. You know, this is awesome. You know, go Blues. Like, I just think there's other ways to show your emotion than dropping the F-bomb when you know a camera is right in your face, and it's not right after the game. This is 15, 20 minutes after the game. You've already celebrated. It's not in the moment, and you're going to continue to celebrate. You have a camera in your face. Do you really have to drop the F-bomb? You're not caught off guard. It's right there in your face. That's where I have an exception with the players doing it. And now do you feel like I'm being like, oh, they're excited, they're in the moment, they just won the cup. Look, I won a Super Bowl. I wouldn't run around the field like dropping F-bombs left and right.
And people are created different. Like, this is a moment that these guys have been waiting for. I put it entirely on NBC for letting it bleed through. Because I just don't think it's the responsibility of the play. Now, and I understand, like, you can be better at that, okay? You don't have to conduct yourself like that. But at the same time, in that moment of elation, I am okay with these guys expressing themselves the way that they want to. It's NBC's job to be the strainer in between what comes out of their mouth and what goes into my ears. That's their responsibility.
It is. As a player, you know, you got to understand your stage, too. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And it's like the camera's right in front of your face. And yeah, NBC, look, they got to do a lot better job. But the players have to understand what's going on. And, like, kids are watching. Do you want your, you know, 8-year-old son at home listening to all those F-bombs
dropped? No, I don't.
And I don't either. And so I just think that they could have handled themselves better. But certainly I put more of it on NBC.
Hit us up on the RamosLaw.com text line. Let us know what you think of this conversation because it's interesting. It's niche, but it's interesting. 303-713-1043. Brian and Evan says, I celebrate like a champion when I get a text read on air. I'm serious. I'm outside overturning cars and just going crazy. Well, go burn a couch, Brian.
There you go.
Here we are again.
Hell yeah!
Good stuff here. We'll return back to this conversation.
Somebody counted 7.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's, you know what? That's excessive.
A little bit.
It's excessive.
A lot.
That's excessive. Okay. Not only did the Rockies take an L to the Cubs yesterday, but they took another last night. Details next. Stoke, not only did the Rockies take an L to the Cubs yesterday in lopsided fashion.
It didn't matter. We won the first two. Zach, right?
That's right.
Right. Who cares?
You are really something.
I'm taking your, you're rubbing off on me.
Yeah, hey, after it was 5-0, I'm like, all right, whatever. We took 2 or 3. I'm right, okay with that.
Yeah.
After we get down 5-0.
Yeah. No, I think you do it before the game, but you want to say when we get down big.
Stop. Well, not only, and really, it was a kind of a mirror opposite of the game on Tuesday night where the Rockies won 10-3. They lose yesterday 10-1. But not only do they take the L to the Cubs yesterday, but they took another L last night. Kyle Freeland, Albuquerque, Isotopes, second start.
Bad one.
First start didn't go so hot. Last week, this one was, well, significantly worse. Here is the line from Kyle Freeland last night in AAA. 5 2/3 inning pitched. 9 runs. 8 earned runs. 8 hits. 5 walks. Struck out 5. Gave up 2 dingers.
Oh. Not really what you want.
This is a guy who finished fourth in the Cy Young last year.
Right.
And is down in Albuquerque.
Second start for Albuquerque?
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's the thing. And I heard Patrick's, I didn't hear, but I know what he was talking about this morning with Slareth and Evans. When you go down to the minors, and for a guy like Kyle Freeland, there's certain things that that the team wants accomplished, right? I had a chance to talk with Jeff Breidich in spring training, not this spring training, but the year before.
Name drop.
Well, I'm going to tell you what he told me. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm waiting.
So it's kind of important to, I can't say I talked to this, you know, I mean, you want me not name drop him?
I love when you name drop.
I'm not even going to say it now.
I'm not even going to say it now.
You ruined it. You just ruined it.
Yeah,
nope, not saying it.
Come on.
You ruined it. So blame Zach.
Don't be a baby. Come on. You talked to Jeff Breidich. He was over for dinner. What happened?
And by the way, I do like Jeff a lot. And I know he got a lot of heat for what he said a couple weeks ago, but
yeah.
I'd like to try to have him on and see if we could get him to clarify or see if he wants to at all.
I was just going to say that. Maybe you can hit him up. Maybe you have him in here.
I don't have his number, so I can't just hit him up.
All right.
But I've got a chance to talk with him a few times, and I've enjoyed every one of my conversations with him. And so they, you know, when they're looking at these guys in the minors, and I asked them about Tapia and – you know, his situation, this was not this past year, but the year that he was in the minors. And, you know, they have goals that they want these guys to accomplish before they take that next step, right? Before they go to single A to double A, before they go to double to triple and triple to the majors. And so I think with a guy like Kyle Freeland, what they're doing here is they're working on stuff, right? They have a list of objectives that they want to get accomplished. Okay, hey, let's work on our fastball placement here. We're not even going to throw curveballs tonight, right? Let's work on trying to, you know, work on keeping the ball down in the zone. And that's all we care about. Or let's work on trying to, you know, work on certain things, and that's all we're going to do. So I think you have to be careful when you look at the numbers and say, oh, man, you know, this is going in the wrong direction really quickly. Now, the numbers aren't good, but we don't know what he's trying to accomplish. So hopefully – that is what's going on here with Kyle Freeland, because it's alarming. 5 2/3, 9 runs, 8 earned, 8 hits, 5 walks. You know,
that may be that,
and two home runs. So
the 5 walks may be the most significant thing that sticks out to me, because like Kyle Freeland has been Mr. Location. He's not going to beat you with, you know, Marquez type stuff. He works with a scalpel, not a hatchet. So the fact that he is
apple, not a hatchet.
Like less brute force, more precision.
There you go.
And
okay.
Five walks for Kyle's unusual. And I get what you're saying. Like, to have a great line in Albuquerque is not the objective. It's just not. But at the same time, what we're looking at is certainly not what we're looking for either.
Oh, sure. I mean, you wouldn't want those numbers regardless of what you're doing. But we don't know what he's trying to accomplish here. And maybe he's just down there just trying to pitch. Just like, hey, I'm trying to just get guys out. But I think there's more to it than that. I think he's going down there and he's working on his location. He's working on, you know, whether it be his fastball, his curveball. Maybe the first inning it's like, hey, we're going to throw 95% fastball and work on our location. And then the second inning, hey, let's throw 75%, you know, off-speed stuff. So I'm sure they have an objective here. And obviously it wasn't good last night, but I don't want to read too much into it. I don't want to read too much into it. Because we don't know exactly, you know, what that objective is.
Well, I mentioned after his first start that he had a balk, which is unusual for Kyle. So, you know, he's obviously trying to tinker with something that let me say this. Whatever they're trying to do clearly isn't comfortable for him yet. You have a balk, you walk five, you're giving up multiple dingers in Albuquerque. And I know, this needs to be mentioned as well, the ball flies down there. Home. I talked to Tyler Maughan. Remember Tyler? He joined us for the war room.
Yeah, that was great.
I was chatting with him 2 days ago, and he's like, they're using the Major League Baseball balls now down in Albuquerque for the first time. And whether you think they're juiced or not, I have no idea. But home runs are up over 40% in AAA. So that's a significant detail, too.
Sure.
What's going to be good enough down there to get him back up here? That's the question.
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to see as an organization, and what would suffice as seeing it before you bring him back up here?
I mean, is this going to be a 3-month thing? Is this going to be a, you know, 3-week thing? Is it going to be the whole season type of thing? I mean, it's really odd to see a guy that was just flat out brilliant last year take a turn like he's taken and now be in the minors and just getting shelled in his first couple games. It just has you scratching your head. So, I mean, because you're going to need this guy.
Yeah, need.
He was your opening day star. I mean, this guy was your ace.
That's right.
And now he's in the minors.
That's right.
And you're not even, I mean.
In the minors getting shelled.
Right, yeah. And what are we, a couple months into the season?
Yeah. Yeah, need him to get where the Rockies want to go. It's not some sort of luxury. You need him. Okay. Emmanuel Sanders joined the drive yesterday. He spoke on his future and didn't really keep the white gloves on when talking about one of his teammates. That and much more next. Emmanuel Sanders joined the drive yesterday in part two. Part two of, I like the way you put it, because yesterday I was like round two, and you're like, it's part two.
Right.
It was less adversarial yesterday than it was the first time around. Significantly so.
Right.
But Emmanuel Sanders hung out here with D-Mac and Tom Nalum, and a lot of interesting conversation took place. First, this is Emmanuel Sanders on what motivates him to keep playing after winning a Super Bowl in 2015 and a significant injury.
I don't know. For me, I want to get to 10,000 yards. I want to win another championship. I don't know. I'm chasing greatness. You know, I feel like I still got more than a couple more years. So I feel like these last couple years is my best years, and I'm sure everybody feels that way. But, you know, I'm working, and I feel like I'm getting smarter. I'm getting wiser, like I said, and I feel better physically. So I feel like I got, you know, these next couple years or 3 years is going to be my best years.
When you were into your 30s, you played until you were 36?
Yeah.
Somehow? When you got up there, when you're 32, 30, no, no.
Okay.
I'm like, I
thought you were looking at me like, I don't know.
No, it's still unbelievable that you played in that league for a decade and a half. For anyone at any position, but let alone the wide receiver position. I mean, for Emmanuel to play as long as you did, he's in the league for another half of a decade. And he could. Yeah. I think he's got the body type and drive to do it. But when you were getting into your 30s, what was driving you? He had already won a Super Bowl by that point.
Yeah, I mean, I had two rings. Look, I didn't have anything else to do. Like, what, I mean, what else did I, like, there was one thing in life that, you know, I felt like I was good at, like really good at, and it just came, and it was football, really. That was it. Like, and then it was, what else am I going to do? So, I'm going to keep grinding. I love to compete. I love that, right? I love, like, it's me against you. Let's go at it. I love the locker room, the guys hanging out. You don't get that anywhere else. So it's like, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep doing it until I can't. And so that kind of was my thought process, was because I knew once it's over, it's over. So I'm like, I don't want it to be over. Like, this is a good life. This is fun. You know, you show up. You know, like 3-4 weeks ago for the Broncos, you show up at whatever time, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, whatever. You get a great breakfast. You go sit in a meeting room for a little bit, listen to coach talk, watch some film from the previous day. Then you go get taped up. You go out to practice. And then the rest of the day, you're like, okay, that's it. Or, you know, if you're not on the field working, you go show up at your, you know, workout time, 9 o'clock, work out for 2 or 3 hours, whatever it is. You're back home after lunch. You're on the golf course. And then, it's just like, how can you beat it? So I'm like, I'm going to keep doing this thing until they tell me, we don't want you around here anymore. You're done.
And that's typically how it ends. For you, I got a couple questions here. Emmanuel references 10,000 yards. Like, I'd love to get to 10,000 yards. He is just a tick over 7,000 career yards right now. Did you, and I know, like, 10K wasn't your goal, but did you have, like, benchmarks?
10K definitely wasn't my goal.
Well, did you have benchmarks? I mean, you...
No, never, never.
I never had expectations for yardage.
No, you know, I had the one really good year in Indy, but for me, it's just, I wasn't as... My stats weren't my thing. You know, I wasn't going to go out there and catch, you know, 80 balls in a season. I mean, I had that one season where I caught the 70, but...
1,000-yard season.
That's just not, you know... That wasn't going to be who I was. I was going to go out there and, you know, make some third down catches. And you know, some games I'll play 50 plays, 60 plays. Some games I'll play 10 plays. And so, like, stats for me wasn't something I was, like, really aware of or worried about or thinking about. It was just about doing my job. And if you do, you know, if I knew if I did my job, regardless of my stats. And when I got my opportunities, take advantage of them and be that player that keeps offense on the field and that, you know, the coaches can trust. If I did that, I would stick around. But I knew it was not going to be because of my numbers, ever.
I have to say this because I haven't said it yet in 2019.
Uh-oh. I'm nervous now.
You shouldn't be. I still, and I am not trying to gloss you because you know I'm not here for that.
You want to gloss me? You say this a lot.
I still cannot believe that you, Reggie Wayne, and Marvin Harrison are the only wide receiving trio in one season to all have 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns in the same season. It's never happened before or since.
Pretty cool.
And
I can't
believe in a day and age where we see guys throwing 50 touchdowns and the ball just getting... Matt Ryan throws for 5,000 yards and it's just...
Mahomes,
it's commonplace.
50 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's commonplace.
Peyton, you know, in 2013 here.
Like, how has it never happened since in an era where that's just what we do? I mean...
Rules have changed since then.
With the rule changes as well, I just think that is stunning for maybe some of our new audience members that didn't know that. I haven't reset that yet this year.
Yeah, you need to reset that a little bit more.
I like that monthly reset.
Yeah, why not? Monthly reset. Yeah.
It was great, incredible.
Man. That was so much fun, especially for a guy like me. So I spent 4 years in Baltimore, right? Nothing. You know, I did win a Super Bowl and catch a touchdown, but it wasn't like I had, you know, a 50, 60 catch season. Got to Indy, was hurt the whole first half of the year, surprise, right? And then came on and played really well the second half of the season. And then all of a sudden, you know, have a season where I catch 70 passes for over 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns, like out of the blue. It was just so much fun. It really was. It was a really fun season. And to do it with those guys and on that team and was awesome.
And I've never asked you this before, and we're getting down a rabbit hole here, but that's okay. Did you ever think that in one of the years where you were having a great season and got hurt that you were knocking on the door?
No.
The 2007, you had 635 yards and 5 touchdowns, but you missed.
Yeah, that was here.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, that was here in Denver. That was my year. My year coming off the Achilles.
Oh.
My year coming off the Achilles.
So that was that season.
That was that season. So I started the season off in training camp.
That's right. You're 31 years old, same as Emmanuel.
Yeah. Started the season off in training camp. I wasn't on pup list. I was out there. I hurt my quad early on. And then what happened that year, Zach, I mean, I came here on a one-year, you know, bare minimum deal, and I was happy with it. I was thrilled to get an opportunity and to be playing for Mike Shanahan. I was over the moon. And so, but I was fully expecting to be the third wide. If that, you know, I mean, my Achilles is going to start off slow. Next thing you know, Javon Walker, his knee, he has to have his knee scoped, surgery. So he's out. Next thing, I'm starting. The start, I was the number two receiver pretty much that whole year. Me and Brandon Marshall. Yeah. Me and Brandon Marshall. I was the number two crazy. Receiver. And I'm playing 60, 70 plays a game. I'm like, what is going on here? I didn't sign up for this, you know. But we had a great time. I mean, with Cutler and Scheffler and Marshall. I mean, we had a great time. But I know I missed some of the games later on.
I was going to say you had 635 yards, but you missed three games. If you don't miss those three games and you prorate what you were doing, I mean, you're probably looking at, you know, a 800 yard type season.
Yeah, I banged my knee up, and it was towards the end of the season, and. They just decided to shut me down. We weren't, you know, going anywhere. And so the last couple of weeks, they decided to shut me down. But no, I never really thought about it because, like, I don't know. But that was a fun season, though. I mean, to be coming off an Achilles injury and not, you know, knowing what was going to be my next step. And the next thing you know, I'm starting. That is 60, 70 plays a game. Like, it was fun,
though. That's pretty cool. Let me ask you another one that I have never asked you.
You're supposed to get all these cleared first.
I know. But I think it's fair because I do think what is partly motivating Emmanuel that he didn't say is cashing in again. I mean, who doesn't think about finances? I don't care how much money he's made. He's got to be thinking about the next check. And for you, when you're into your 30s, when you're signing these, you know, low rate deals, how often are you thinking about finances that I'm going to be able to cash one more check. My goal is to cash one more NFL check because those only come around during that window of time.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a part of it, right? I mean, you know that you're not going to be able to make this type of money doing anything else. And so, like, it's a really good living. And so, especially when you get older and you realize your time is dwindling down, you're like, well, what's my next step here? What am I going to do? I don't know what I want to do. I'm certainly not going to be making this type of money. So if I can play, then I'm going to keep playing. So, yeah, everybody thinks about that.
They don't give you that here at the Fan.
No.
They don't have like a vet minimum system.
No. I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Yeah. Waiting on it, though.
Emmanuel hanging out with D-Mac and Tom Nalen yesterday.
You trying to get me in trouble here?
No. No, absolutely not. Hanging out on the drive yesterday, Emmanuel said, he was asked about, you know, what the process is going to be here and at the start of training camp.
I'm going to start off probably with individual, then work my way into 707 and one-on-ones. Even though I can go full go, like you said, why rush?
Right.
What's the rush?
Right.
I'm already going to be ready conditioning-wise because I won't let them kill me. I kill myself every single day. I work my butt off every single day. I'm going to be ready, but at the same time, when I'm ready, all right, now gradually put me in there instead of just throw me in there and just, you know what I mean? So, of course, even though I might be ready, full, why rush and just throw me in there?
What do you think?
Spot on. I love it. I hope that's their approach. You know, for me, it was different. I was on a new team. I had to earn a roster spot. You know, I signed a one-year minimum deal. If I'm not practicing training camp, I'm not making this team. I got to get out there. And so when I came here, it was a lot different. Emmanuel is, you know, he just needs to show that he's healthy. If he's healthy, we know he's our number one receiver. And so I don't think there needs to be a big rush. It's a long training camp. They got five games. Just gradually ease him back into playing football and getting healthy. And so I think I like that approach, and hopefully that's the approach that they take.
Well, it sounds like he's sort of hinting that they are going to be at the controls of that decision. Like he had said, look, I'm great. Right. I'm running routes. I'm good. They're not going to kill me. I'll kill myself. but it sounds like this may be like a very carefully made organizational decision.
And it should be. It should be. I think, you know, over the last 10, 15, 20 years, I mean, teams have become a lot smarter with how they handle players and how they practice players and just the recovery of players and all of those things has gotten so much better every single year. So certainly those guys in the training room, training staff, and coaches realize the importance of Emmanuel Sanders and that you want the guy healthy. Not for healthy for, you know, week three in preseason. Who cares? It doesn't matter. We want him healthy first week of the season, and especially you want him healthy in November or December. So you know he can play football. He's not going to forget how to get open and run routes. Would you like him out there every day? Yeah, but that's just not the situation he's in. So take your time with him. Make sure that he's ready to go. Make sure that he's feeling good, and then gradually ease him back into football shape.
And you didn't hear it in that cut, but he did. Go on to say, look, this is all about week one. This is about week one. So I like that long view because not everyone has that. You know, guys can get anxious. I know how, you know, when you're injured, anyone who's ever been a part of a team sport that they love being a part of and are injured, it takes an incredible mental toll. And you have a tendency, I know, at least I did, I want to get back there, even if I'm 80%, if I can get back there. But I love that Emmanuel has this mature, long view approach.
Right. And that's from being a vet and being around and seeing a lot of different things. And, you know, a younger guy, what are you going to try to do? You're going to try to get out there right away. An older guy, you realize that it's a long season. It's a long training camp. And the last thing you want to do is rush back for meaningless preseason games if you don't have to. And certainly he doesn't have to.
Well, another guy that is going through the rehab process himself is a hometown kid, Philip Lindsay. This is Emmanuel Sanders talking about what he's been talking about with Philip Lindsay.
I've really been enjoying spending time like working with Philip because I'm talking to him about the mental side in terms of if we're going to win a Super Bowl this year, this city is depending on us. And so if this city is depending on us, we got to outwork everybody. We got to have a different mentality. I'm talking to him about the goals that we got to accomplish. I was telling him today, if you play against the Broncos offense and Philip Lindsay goes in motion, you best believe the entire defense is looking at you. If you can be a threat, and we're working every day of trying to make him a threat, or he's already a threat, but tightening up his receiving so he can be a threat there as well. So, you know, I feel like God don't make no mistakes. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the work that me and him doing, you know, you guys can see it during the season, you know, because that would be amazing to see Philip Lindsay spread out wide and we spreading out people, and now he's on a linebacker. Good luck.
Couple different thoughts there, but before I share mine, what do you think of that cut?
I like it. You know, those guys are working out, rehabbing together, and for a young guy like Philip Lindsay has had as much success early on as he's had from an undrafted guy to being – you know, a Pro Bowler and having a 1,000-yard season when, you know, expectations coming in the training camp was, you know, make the team. Then early on, you could tell he was, and it was, okay, well, he'll be a nice third down back for us. And next thing you know, he's over 1,000 yards in the Pro Bowl. So a guy like that with so much so early coming at him, you have a veteran presence there with him right now to kind of take him under his wings and a guy that's been to the mountaintop in Emmanuel Sanders that's had, you know, as much success as you can almost possibly have in the NFL. You have that guy mentoring a guy like Philip Lindsay that I think is great.
One of my big takeaways there, and I have two.
Because this guy's, Emmanuel's seen a lot. You talk about his days in Pittsburgh with, you know, Antonio Brown and Mike Wallace and Ben Roethlisberger, and then, you know, coming here with Peyton Manning and then winning the Super Bowl in 2013, having the, you know, 50 plus touchdowns that Peyton threw and having as much success as he's had. And then all of a sudden again, you have a few rocky years with Gary's last year and then the couple years with Vance. So, I mean, he's seen a lot and been through a lot. And I think that could really, really help Philip Lindsay out.
These guys are talking Super Bowl, Stoke. Like, they're not talking about getting back into the playoffs. And that's how, look, they're competitors, and Emmanuel's been to that mountaintop, so he wants to get back. Whether you think it's realistic or not, there's a part of me that appreciates the fact that they are not looking at, you know, just sort of putting one step in front of the other. They're like, look, we're going to win a Super Bowl. We need to outwork everyone. We need to be at this, you know, peak level of work ethic, let alone performance. And I maybe kind of rolling your eyes right now.
I am.
Yeah.
You see it.
Yeah, I do see that.
I mean,
what do you want them saying? I want to start. If we're going to start 1-0, then we need to outwork everyone.
Yeah, so I don't mind it, right? I mean, that's. I hope that is, you know, my team's thought process in the offseason. I mean, that's what you want, right? I mean, that's. You want that type of optimism. You don't want guys going around, you know, oh, this year's going to stink. Got nobody. I mean, that's not what you want. So, like, I mean, that's what you want them talking about. You want them talking about being great. I think that's the first step into being great is talking about it. Thinking about it.
Sure.
And believing that you can do it. So obviously they, you know, those guys feel like they can do it, which, I mean, that's what you want. Is it realistic? No. But, I mean, that's just, it's not.
It's
not.
Look,
Zach, it's not.
Hold on a second. Is it expected? No. Is the probability of it high? No. But we got to remember what league we're talking about. It's the closest thing to the NHL. I told you last offseason.
Uh-oh. Now you're making me think again.
After the Eagles won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, what were their Super Bowl odds going into that season? They were 40-1. You know what the Broncos Super Bowl odds were last year at the start of the season? 40-1. Now, one obviously fell vastly short of the previous. But in this league, look, we're talking about, and bear with me here, we're talking about a coach that has coached at the highest level in the Super Bowl, a quarterback that has played at the highest level and won a Super Bowl, Emmanuel Sanders himself, we have, for all our information that we've gathered, he's going to be back to a number one status. He's won a Super Bowl. We got a 1,000-yard back, a terrific defense. Is it likely? No.
Is it realistic? No.
Stoke, it's not. Is it realistic? No, but to say that this isn't the NBA. If you win 10 games and you get into that party and you win a game, now who says? I mean, again, I'm not saying that they're going to win.
I think you are.
Stop it. There's nothing to say. I didn't say anything.
Zach Bias predicting the Super Bowl win for the Broncos this year.
Stop. Like, are you telling me there's not ingredients here that you can point to and say?
Of course, there's ingredients all over the NFL, though, Zach. I mean, you're like, you can't.
Ingredients in Miami and in Buffalo Tampa?
And Buffalo has stunk for the last 30 years.
No, they're in the playoffs last year. Sorry. But they're not thinking about a Super Bowl in Tennessee is not going to go win a.
Well, Tennessee's had more success here lately than the Broncos, so slow your roll
there. Yes, they have.
And you look at Oakland, they're like, okay, look at what we have here in Oakland. You know, we have three first-round picks.
And this is what I'm saying. This is what makes the NFL the NFL.
Sure. But is it realistic for the Oakland Raiders to be in the Super Bowl this year? No. Is it realistic for the Denver Broncos to be in the Super Bowl this year?
Has Derek Carr won a Super Bowl?
No.
Is the guy that Derek Carr is throwing to won a Super Bowl?
Has Antonio Brown won a Super Bowl? Yes.
I think he came right after. No?
Oh, maybe so. I don't know. Yeah, you might be right there.
But, like, we have, like, actual.
Their head coach has.
Their head coach has. He certainly has.
As a head coach.
20 years ago, he did, for sure.
I don't know if it was 20.
It was like 2001, that Bucs team?
Yeah, it probably was. We're getting old quick.
Close to it, right?
Getting old quick, man. Like, it didn't feel like 20 years ago.
I know.
But it probably was, yes. Look, I just don't think it's very realistic for the Broncos this year to be, you know, if they make the playoffs, I would be shocked. Okay?
You'd be shocked.
I would be shocked.
Despite seven teams being in the playoffs this past year that weren't in the playoffs the year before.
Despite all those stats you want to give me about playoff teams from the year before, this and that. I would be shocked.
Okay.
It's hard in the NFL. Okay. You want me to give you all my reasons why I'd be shocked?
Mm-mm.
Okay, good. There's been a lot of change around here, Zach.
Of course there has, yes.
There's been a lot of change. And, and to do it in the first year under Vic Fangio, I think would be awesome. I almost pulled a Zach Bye right there. I said, I'm pulling for them to do it, but I don't think they're going to do it. I didn't do that, though.
You have a license to do that because that is truly what you believe and what you're thinking. So you can say that. I'm not you. I won't police verbiage like that.
But you already know that. I'm pulling for them to get there.
Are you?
Yes. Of course I am. I mean, I pull for the Broncos every stinking single week. I'm out over there with my son.
I know you do.
And,
I know
you know, when they lose, I get mad.
I know you
and
do.
And I'm frustrated just like a normal fan is. So, look, I mean, I'm pulling for them every single week. I am. And I mean, I know you are, and just like everybody else here. But I'm also going to be very critical and just of them and what you see. But I think their window, like we talked about, is a couple years away, 2 years away.
You don't normally hear a current player talk about one of his former teammates, let alone a current teammate, but that's exactly what happened yesterday afternoon, and we'll dive into it next.